The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
So now to Sibos. Actually, at the event today, we had a very interesting opening at the event. We had a blockchain keynote, and Neil Cross was there, who we're going to hear from in a moment, Simon Taylor from Barclays. There was a lot of interest in it. In fact, the queue for the event was about an hour. People were waiting, queuing up for the event. And then when the event actually occurred, they were oversubscribed by hundreds. And so they had an amphitheater set outside, and they were worried about, the Swift guys were worried that it was going to fall over, so they stopped people after a while. So blockchain was really hot. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and some of the other initiatives. But right now we have two guests who are coming here to talk about some of their technologies that are being deployed in the banking space. We have Vic Dossi, who's the worldwide technology strategist for banking at Microsoft. Vic, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks.
You've been on before, right?
No, first time.
Okay. Microsoft's been on, though.
Yes. So.
And then Rashik Palmer, who's IBM Distinguished Engineer. Rashik, welcome.
Hi.
So, first of all, let me start off, Rashik. I'll go to you first and then to you, Vic. We hear a lot about sort of machine intelligence and cognition, and later on, in fact, on Thursday, because we're pre-recording this, but on Thursday is going to be a man-machine session at InnoTribe. But obviously, you guys are right in the midst of sort of machine cognition when it comes to this sort of space. What are some of the interesting advances that have happened in that space in the last 12 months or so?
Sure, and I know you've had many discussions on Watson and what we do with cognitive for some time now. So whilst we're addressing the whole medical space, that's continuing to move like at a pace. But where we're now starting to find new advances are really in how we distill patterns from information sources that we haven't often had easy access to. And my favorite example, which was only announced in April this year, was with the railroads. Anybody who travels on the railroads probably knows that one of the biggest fears of the train is the cracked wheel. Cracked wheel is the primary cause of derailments.
And texting, apparently.
Well, texting.
Engineers texting while they're driving, right?
Yes, that's not a good plan, absolutely. So one of the ways in which the railroad industry tracks the wheels is to have a little man go along and use a hammer and hammer, tap each wheel.
Okay. And that works, does it?
Apparently.
Yeah.
And so what we thought, there must be a better way of doing that. And what we found was if you add a little microphone to the train, the sound signature allows you to pick out where a wheel's about to crack.
Wow.
And we're now measuring 100,000 signals every day on every train.
Wow.
So the railroads are putting them in place, so we have this phenomenal insight. And that's because the cognitive algorithm can distill out from the sound signature the cracked wheel versus the other wheel. It's all about the pattern matching we get in the machine learning.
And, you know, the other thing is that you could repurpose that for sort of these white noise generators to help you to go to sleep later at night too.
I'm sure there's many other uses.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit more about, Vic, tell me about, some of the exciting innovations that are happening in the Microsoft space for helping banks. How are you guys enabling banks to get more technology into the experience?
Sure, you bet. Well, just kind of building off of the machine learning piece, a big piece of what we're working on is helping the banks be more collaborative so that they can work together more. So a lot
between
of
banks or between
actually between even themselves. So yes, between banks, but most especially, if you look at all of the annual reports, you'll see every one of them trying to optimize and make better use of their workforce.
Okay.
Building on the machine learning, one of the big challenges as we find this specialty domain, which is data scientists. They're precious, few and far between, in high demand. They have some of the biggest challenges collaborating. And so a lot of what we've done in the machine learning is, yes, helping to compute at massive scale that we hadn't imagined before, introducing new data sources and data types, and finding patterns that we could never find as humans, but then being able to locate, share, collaborate, and get that into production really quickly. So some areas we're working right around that machine learning.
So let me ask you both this. So let's step back from this a second. If you're a bank, in respect to, you know, experience that's coming down the pipe and these sorts of things, what technology should I be most concerned about, or should I be most interested in figuring out, you know, that I understand?
So from my perspective, banks are awash with data today.
Right.
And actually they're not using all of the data. In fact, they're using not even half the data that they have at their disposal. So as Vic was saying, data scientist is a skill that is a severe lack in the industry in general. But banks actually have a lot of data scientists. You know, they do have them. They've had them for many years. So one of the tricks I think we need to pull is, how do we leverage...
I think they call them auditors, though, in banks. I'm just joking.
Well, they have all kinds of roles. But how do we take that community and start to unlock that potential that's latent in that community? And it's about tools. So whether it's, you know, our tools or other people's tools, I think the advances in analytic algorithms and that machine learning together gives us some really fabulous opportunity.
Yep.
And what we're seeing, I think, is the ability of a range of data science. One of the problems we have in the industry today is we don't explain what a data scientist really is. And we've just lumped two words together and said that's the answer, but actually that's not helpful. We've got to unpack that and help people understand the range of data scientists, whether it's somebody who's collecting the data, to somebody who's analyzing the data, or somebody who's doing forensics to try and identify the clues of how this data is going to be valuable to me. Right?
Finding the stories or
exactly.
Finding applications.
And I think that's where machine learning is actually having some real advances. So finding, as you say, some of those stories and then understanding what the outcome is. We forget that actually data alone cannot be value. It's only when somebody acts on it that you get the value.
Right. What about you?
Well, you know, we see when we really start talking about those experiences and other technologies that are coming to bear, you know, we see as we continue to be more mobile and more digital, it's helping to bring that human element to that mobile and digital experience. Here's one example, the remote advisory. Bringing communications and embedding those into a treasury application or an advisory application so that when we need questions answered by people, we can make that quick and effective.
So here's the interesting thing, though. When you start to apply data, machine learning, cognition, and these sorts of things, machines are getting much, much better at analyzing this data and hypothesizing on it and synthesizing it. Where is the role for humans moving forward?
Yeah, so I get this question a lot when I go and give talks about Watson and the cognitive capabilities. And I remember actually talking in a university in London specifically on this topic to a bunch of MBAs. And the question they asked was, so is my MBA wasted? And actually the answer is no.
Did you ask them if they could code?
I didn't ask them that. Actually, many of the MBAs can code.
It's
actually quite impressive that the amount of coding that we get out of these guys. But the answer here is, it's not about providing the answers, it's about being able to ask the right question. And what we have to do is we have to help our future leaders understand how to distill the right questions and be able to find the things that matter. Ultimately, humans are humans, and it's about human interaction and how does the technology help that human interaction become much more meaningful.
So technology can be the trigger for a human event.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
What about you, Vic?
Well, one of the things that I think are amazing today is how bound we are to unleashing the insight to data.
Yep.
We are bound by the query. What does it take?
And
who is the person that needs to put that query together, the technical query, to actually get that data out? And so what we've worked a lot in the last few years is to have natural language query so that I don't have to have an expert, but I can have a business person that can simply type in and what is the question, and have the charts and the rendering and the visualizations be delivered to them. I always use the expression that an opportunity today comes and goes in the time you can have a cup of coffee. So you sure don't want to be looking for IT to start to build things like this. Now, something that we've then added on top of this natural language query is Cortana Analytics. Cortana is our personal assistant in Microsoft.
Cortana is these technologies are going to be very interesting at the personal level, because Cortana is going to become the way you generate these queries, right?
Well, and that was my point. Yes, yeah. Now we have it to typing, but now you think about having these voice and natural voice interfaces so that you can actually ask, and they make some sense out of that and actually start to present the information back to us.
So let me ask you this. I want to sort of get into, Microsoft had just had an event like a week ago where you launched the new Surface, which is getting rave reviews. Everyone's saying it's a huge leap. But you guys are working on some other very interesting technology, HoloLens, you've got Kinect, and all of these sort of technologies. So give me a use case or a scenario where you use these technologies, or maybe Cortana, in 5 years' time, and how it would change my interaction in the banking or payment space.
So HoloLens is a great example. HoloLens is a virtual reality device, but it's a computer, so it's not tethered, meaning I'm free once I put this on. The use case, and the one that I'm excited about, is industrial strength, and that is for the trader on the floor or for the investment analyst. These are the people who are looking for the screens and the insight across a huge barrage of screens. Imagine having a visual cue so that you can always look where you need to, and you're directed, and you have an infinite number of screens.
So replacing the trader's screens with a HoloLens.
Exactly.
Well, that's interesting.
And visually or audible cueing on which direction I might look in my virtual world.
Rashid, give me a scenario use case 5-10 years out where this technology all comes together for IBM.
Yeah, so for us, it's about actually creating those magical client experiences. So today, I don't know enough about the person I'm dealing with on the other side of the table. In the future, using their tweets, their knowledge, I can really understand their personality, what matters to them, and the values, and be able to tune my dialogue and my language to be much more meaningful to them. And so whether we're using speech synthesis or whether you were using visual clues, it's bringing together both the textual data we already have, the visual data from their personality, their body language, and also any other sort of sensory input we can have, and then creating that experience. So when it comes to serving them, we're serving them in a much more personal way.
So here's a question for you guys, right? In the old days, this was about entering data via keyboards, screens. We now got multi-touch and so forth. But now we've got all these sensors capturing data. We're capturing behavior of people. We're capturing voice instructions. We're listening. In the future, Cortana will be listening to your meeting and be able to schedule follow-up from that, things like that. So how does that change the nature of the way computers synthesize input, given that what percentage of data input in the future, for example, is going to come from sensors rather than from someone with a keyboard?
Yeah, I think sensor input in the form of keyboard has really been slowing us down.
Right.
And it was originally designed to slow people down, right? And as the compute power has grown to a point now where we don't need to slow it down, I think the input from a broad range of sensors. We're seeing that especially in the medical field. We're using graphics, images, and a whole bunch of different technologies to make that interaction possible.
Yeah.
Dick? And the same for these pieces. I'd say we're starting to see sensor data from all kinds of things. One being shipping containers.
Sure.
And what is the temperature, what is the situation, has it been opened, the ability to now track and understand where it is in real time brings some really interesting possibilities to limit some risk on big trades, et cetera, and also to be able to predict you know, how to make things better, as far as when I say make things better, how to improve the integrity of that shipment, et cetera. So those are interesting in a sense. Telemetry data for insurance, we've seen a lot. And when I talk about telemetry, just, yes, we're emitting an immense amount of information all the time. And why can't we use that to start to optimize my insurance plans? And we've seen that around the world, and we've helped a couple companies implement that, so that based on a gamified application, you can measure your driving behavior, and the better score you get, the better rates you start to get. It's an interesting new paradigm. I do think there's one more piece that a lot of times we forget in that kind of social and what is the profile and how can I be more relevant, and that is the actual physical proximity and what is happening in people's life when they're not online. Today, we have quite a bit of information for the online profiles. I mean, everybody could look at a Facebook profile and almost shudder. But what happens when they walk out the door and do that thing they call life? And then, therefore, proximity information, beacon technologies, those things are starting to bring a lot of improvement to that customer experience.
Okay, so just before we get a break, about the last minute before we get a break, if you were a bank, I'll give you 30 seconds each, if you were a bank, what would you be doing at Sibos this week?
So I would spend most of my time trying to understand blockchain.
Okay, that's good. And Vic?
You know, I would be understanding and demystifying the cloud. The cloud can be a huge, huge agility factor for banks, and it's underutilized today, but we're really coming around and making sure it's compliant, et cetera. The other piece that I'd say is be aware and watch and understand cybersecurity, because the face of all of the exploits and the face of security and the way we protect our banks and our customers has entirely changed, and it's going to be much different from here going forward. So learn about cybersecurity and understand the cloud.
Fantastic. Well, let's just take a break. Vic Dossi, Worldwide Technology Strategist for Banking at Microsoft. Thanks for joining us. Rashik Parma, IBM Distinguished Engineer. Actually, you know, just stick around for a couple of minutes, Rashik, because we might just get a comment for you from you on blockchain just after the break, okay? Okay, you're listening to Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this break.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin, a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's Moovin.com.
What do you want your world to look like in 2030? This is Rachel Morrissey, the producer of Breaking Banks, and we are joining the UN Global Goals Initiative and participating in Radio Everyone this week from September 25th to October 2nd. Global Goals is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. To find out more about Global Goals and Radio Everyone, go to www.globalgoals.org.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Okay, so we're back at Breaking Banks. We are doing this. We're not live from Cyburst, because if we were doing it live, it'd be 2 o'clock in the morning. So this is a pre-recorded session in Singapore. Right now it's live. We're recording it live. It's not scripted or anything like that, but anyway. So a quick shout-out to Temenos, who is helping sponsor the event for us today, and, of course, the Inner Tribe team, Peter Vanderauer, and the guys who put on a great show at Cyburst this year. And one of the really hot sessions was this morning was blockchain. So we had people queuing up, and it was very interesting. So it seems like fintech has arrived. So, Rashik, before the break, we were talking about some of these technologies, but Why is blockchain suddenly getting a lot of interest? This was the first time we've seen banks react majorly like this to this sort of session at Cyburst. So what's hot about blockchain?
Yeah, so I think there's a number of things. One is the technology itself is now becoming more understandable. And I think people are now starting to realize the ways in which we can use blockchain to address real issues that exist in the world. And the issues are all ones which are outside the enterprise. So we've for the last 50 years, focused on optimizing the processes that are inside the enterprise. And we've not spent anywhere near the same amount of effort trying to understand the value chains that span multiple organizational boundaries. And really, blockchain is one of the core technologies that will help us redefine those multi-organizational chains. So whether it's trade finance, or whether it's, let's credit a whole bunch of different processes, or whether it's in the airline industry and trying to create track of the inventory that sits behind the aircraft itself. All of those things will, we believe, end up on some kind of blockchain in the next N years, where N is not that long a time.
So Neil Cross, who's the Chief Innovation Officer at DBS Bank, he's joining us as well. Neil, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you, Brett. I listen to your show quite a bit, and it's quite an honor to be on here.
Well, it's an honor to have you.
Yeah, I did imagine that you'd sit here with glasses of champagne, but I can't see
No, I haven't got any champagne. I can probably get you a glass of Coke, but yeah. So tell me, for those who are uninitiated, because we do have a lot of listeners around the world who may not know what blockchain is, how would you describe blockchain to someone?
Okay, say you can call it a piece of technology. That's what it is appearing as at the moment. And essentially, it's very similar to peer-to-peer systems. You have a chain of information which gets passed around distributed PCs without a central kind of hub. And it contains information about transactions and ownership, if you will. So every single PC inside the system has the same information on it.
And synchronizes it.
And synchronizes automatically.
So that's how the DNS domain name system works, isn't it? That same...
That's it. From many years ago, it's very similar, in fact. It holds.
So is the DNS a distributed ledger?
No.
Why?
Well, the DNS doesn't actually update. It's just one field, right?
Right.
Whereas a blockchain is a chain of information.
So it's constantly updating. It's dynamic.
Exactly. It keeps its history, doesn't it?
And you can't actually... There is no primitive inside the structure which allows you to delete anything. Once you've put it in the chain, it stays there forever.
And so tell me, why is DBS interested in blockchain, Neil?
There's a number of things in our industry. It's really for things outside the bank that we feel, could be significantly improved using this technology. It's, in fairness, we had to look at it because we had to look at Bitcoin. And so everyone was, hyping about Bitcoin and customers were asking us. So we did some study inside of that. What we actually uncovered was that Bitcoin's kind of interesting, but the technology below that blockchain. And that's how we got into it. And then we started looking at use cases for that technology. Something that a lot of people are looking at is around payments. Personally, and as DBS, we're more interested in trade finance, which is a very convoluted and manual process that does have, some levels of fraud in there, and it does have some ambiguity and risk which can be ironed out using this blockchain technology.
So describe for me a scenario where blockchain would help trade finance.
In trade finance, so essentially we're financing trade. So a business is buying some widgets, for example, from, let's say, China. and they produce the invoice, and they need financing. They need to get those widgets to turn them into their products and services to sell. And obviously, we would finance that as proof of that. We need their invoice. We need the bill of lading when it goes on a ship. And we want to see that those widgets are there. They're definitely there. They're going to be loaded. They're going to come to our customer. And we'll finance that until the customer builds their products and sells them and then repays the bank.
So this could also work for that whole letter of credit scenario where you've got a supplier waiting to ship your goods and he's got to be sure he's going to get paid and all
that's
this
it.
Sort of stuff.
That management of that whole value chain is incredibly complex. And we get issues around the ownership piece. So there might be multiple copies of the bill of lading, there might be multiple copies of the invoice. The great thing about blockchain is there's one single copy of those objects and it's irrefutable.
Right, because everyone can verify it on the same, well, not distributed ledger system. So Lou Zerowski, who's joining us right now, he's the head of consumer payments at ACI Worldwide. Lou, give us a scenario where this, where the blockchain or technology like this could change the payment space.
Well, I'm picking up from Neil's point, actually, that this year, and DBS in particular, seems to have more applications outside of core payments. And actually, some of the better applications are more closely linked to the front end, the place where transactions or trade starts. And we as a company, we certainly dabbled in our own experiments with blockchain. And there's hardly a customer of ours that isn't doing exactly the same. So one of the things I've learned over the past year is that virtually everybody is playing with the underlying technology. And I think we're probably not unique in finding that the application for this technology is not so much likely to take off in core payments, because actually there's plenty of far more effective ways of using payments, existing payments infrastructure, to make transactions happen. But the application is far more likely to take place at the interface of payments and trade. And the other thing I'd like to say.
So basically, coding the flow of an experience that has a payment in it, but. Yeah, is that
absolutely
the way
that- and so where you're coding the actual trade and the knowledge about the trade as well as the actual payment, which
could include
of that.
A contract, it could include assets.
That's actually a far more complex situation than just doing a payment. And the other thing I'd like to say is that I was at Boston last year for Sibos, and that was actually the first year where Bitcoin became, or rather blockchain became, really really big.
That's so what do you think's big at Sibos this year?
It's early days. We're only sort of half a day in. The plenary's only just started. But I've noticed a lot of chatter in the rooms about platform, about open APIs, about connectivity.
Sexy though, man. APIs.
Well, it's not that sexy, actually. It's a lot of it's about sort of gluing systems together, and it's about developer communities. But actually, that seems to be the new rock and roll. It's great.
Yeah. And I'll just on that point and kind of tying that back to blockchain, I think the interesting thing we're seeing around blockchain and APIs, it's actually going to redefine a lot of business models. So if you look at blockchain, it's just a piece of technology. Or we can also look at it, as we're looking at, it's a design pattern. So it designs how you interface with other businesses and entities. That will then define what partnerships you can now do. That will then define your potential business models and how you can make revenue in the future. And the same with APIs. If you can interconnect not just to financial organizations, but imagine I could use my banking app to not only pay for a taxi, I could order a taxi. And so bringing these APIs together, because the customer has a job to be done. And guess what? Their job to be done is not doing a payment. Their job to be done is not buying a mortgage. Their job to be done is I need to buy a home. Mm-hmm. And my family's growing. I need to do something. And so the value that APIs have is we can become part of that very personal value chain that they're trying to achieve without being overly banky and having a product, so to speak, to sell to them.
Okay, so Neil, who do you get within the bank to do this stuff? Because we're talking a lot about different technologies here. Maybe Rashik, you can give your thoughts on this as well. Is there a skills gap here? Because this is all brand new stuff, so we don't necessarily have the skills in banks right now to do this stuff, do we?
Well, it depends what part of this you're doing. We started our journey, actually, I created a volunteer program. We had one of our missions as an innovation group is turning passion into action, and we had a very senior executive in the finance team was very interested in cryptocurrency. I talked to their boss. I said, hey, can we have Mikkel Larsen's his name? Can we have him for one day a week in the innovation group? We're going to focus on him on a special project around cryptocurrency and blockchain. He did that for 3 months. He flew around the world. He really got into it. It's his absolute passion.
Did he, when he flew around the world, did he have to do it in one day?
No, but he had to do it on his own money. And the point is, he created a very detailed report on the industry and what we should do as a bank. We took that to the CEO, and the CEO moved on. We then did a hackathon and other things. But the point is that the way we operate is about, it was great that we could find someone in the bank who had a passion on this and then could step out of their day job and follow their dream with this thing. And that was a great thing. On the technology side, well, it's quite different from today's technology. And so we do work with external parties on this.
Yeah,
and actually, it's interesting you say you had a volunteer team, because my last job, I was a president for IBM's Academy of Technology, which is actually volunteer structure. And the initial work on blockchain started with them 4 years ago. So when we built our own minting service to build some skills. And that volunteer team has then become the experts that are now helping drive the strategy for the company. But your bigger question on skills, I think, is a bigger one, is a very important one. And it doesn't matter which part of the service you have across the bank, there are major skills gaps. The whole analytic skills that we were talking about earlier, there are massive, massive issues in there. And blockchain brings a very different mindset. And that mindset isn't traditional. It's not typical for the bank. So the bank needs to rethink how they imagine those kind of ACID systems that we're very familiar with. They don't quite apply in this case. So there's a very different design and so on. But the other piece of the jigsaw is we also need to understand the customer.
And how they're going to how's they going to use this?
And we don't. I don't think the banks have spent enough time really understanding the customer. They understand the financial part of the customer, but they don't understand the customer. And there's a much bigger piece of the jigsaw to pick up on there.
So Neil and Lou, maybe we'll get your thoughts on this as well. But there's behavioral economics, there's psychology, there's user experience stuff involved here. How does that all blend in from a skills perspective? And how do you do that without something like a bank saying, "Well, that's not how we do it," because you've got to put an application form in front of them at the branch and get them to sign it.
So I'll answer that, because I think at ACI we're almost like a mirror of all the banking industry, and we've been going 40 years with a certain way of doing things, and we sort of have this payments innovations dilemma about working out which ones to go with. So many options to choose from, and very often the challenge we have is not so much the technology to implement or which bit of new innovation, technology innovation to take, but it's kind of what sort of socially acceptable, what things that people actually understand as a social concept. Now, some of these social concepts are very, very sort of simple. It's like tapping a screen three times or swiping a screen left to get rid of something.
Or right.
Or right, depending on...
You can do that on Tinder, right?
Was it Grindr? I always get confused.
I don't know what you mean. I've heard of Tinder, but what's this other one you speak of?
I don't know.
Neil, have you heard of it? Don't go there, Neil. Don't go there.
No comment.
So, but these are social things which, nobody gives you a user manual for these things. We have to go and sort of adopt them. And as we get older, the ability to adopt these skills is, it decreases. Yeah. And I think there ought to be a Moore's Law invented, if somebody hasn't already done this, for what the rate of adoption of new, social skills is every 2 years. So the Moore's Law is so everything doubles every 2 years. I think people are
incapable. Kurzweil, probably. It's Kurzweil's Law.
Kurzweil, you can only adopt a new thing every... a new skill, maybe three skills every 5 years, and that limits how much you can do as a company, and it's certainly
right, guys.
Banks.
So that's good. Let's take a quick break. Neil, where can we find out more information about what DBS is doing?
You can go to dbs.com/innovation, or you can go to our LinkedIn site as well and find out more.
And you got a spread in the Straits Times over the weekend, isn't it?
Yes, which is great. My mother's very proud. Oh, she does love the print media, but with me and Swift talking about the fintech revolution and what we're doing in that space.
Very good. Well, congrats on the work you're doing there, and hopefully we can see some real innovation coming out of DBS.
Oh, yes. I think we're doing it properly. Thank you, Brett.
Thanks, Neil Cross, Lou Zorowski. Lou, stick around. We might get you give us some thoughts on social stuff. And Rushik, thanks for joining us from IBM once again. Okay, guys, let's take a quick break.
Time. There's never enough. You just don't have the time to search out all the latest banking innovations from around the world. But the good news is, we've already done it for you at Banking Reports. 700 hours of research goes into each edition of our Global Banking Innovation Monitor. Be smarter and get one step ahead. Get banking reports sent quarterly to your inbox. To subscribe, follow us on Twitter at banking_reports.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
This is Brett King, the host of Breaking Banks. We've got some exciting news for you. We've just joined with Radio Everyone and the United Nations on their Global Goals Initiative. Now, this is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. So, Breaking Banks, we're planning a special episode on October the 1st to talk about the organizations around the world that are using fintech to increase financial inclusion, to eradicate poverty, and reduce inequality. Join us at Breaking Banks and the team at Radio Everyone on the UN Global Goals Initiative to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. A quick shout out to our partner for this show, Swift InnerTribe, Cybos. If you want to check out information about InnerTribe and their startup competition, go to innertribe.com. We'll be talking to some of the startups from the InnerTribe competition later in another show. But for today, we're talking about some of the innovations that are being showcased at Cybos. And we have joining us in our studio here in Singapore, Henry Balani, the head of innovation at Acuity, and Lou Zarawski, who was on before the break, the head of consumer payments at ACI Worldwide. Welcome, guys. Gentlemen, to Breaking Banks. Now, last week we had on the show Mshwari, and it was a really interesting show. If you guys haven't listened to it, you should. I recommend you do. But one of the things that's emerging as an interesting sub-discipline, right, or competency of fintech is a space we're calling regtech. Have you heard this term before? Regtech?
Oh, we're drawing a blank here.
Ah, but there you go.
I've heard of regulation as an innovative force.
Yep. And Tom Groenfeld from Forbes has just walked in the room as well. So, Tom, have a seat, and we might get you to join in on this conversation as well.
Yeah, so it's almost like an oxymoron, doesn't it?
Sorry? An oxymoron, regtech. Well, this is the thing. So what we see is some of these emerging developing economies who are making huge leaps and bounds in terms of financial inclusion, but essentially because they don't have legacy regulation that is inhibiting growth. So let's look at, Bitcoin's a classic example, right? So Bitcoin enters the market. What does the US do? You need a Bitcoin exchange license. You need this, you need that. Others ban it. Other markets have a different approach to it. M-Pesa. Bcash, these guys, flourish in terms of financial inclusion, and suddenly 75% of the Kenyan population now has a simple bank account on their phone, but they don't have to go to a branch and sign a piece of paper, and present a passport or a driver's license to get identified to open that bank account. Whereas in, here in Singapore, you still need to front up and sign a signature card to open a bank account. So, you know, here is the challenge. If you look at identity and all of this stuff that's happening, how are we going to still make it safe and at the same time make it efficient and innovative in these spaces? How do you thread those two in developed markets?
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Thank you, Brett, for having me as well on the show. The assumption here is that identity verification therefore means it's something bad because it inhibits innovation. I think that's an underlying assumption that we have.
I didn't say that, but you paraphrased me.
Right. So it's a question of whether we think regulation is good or bad, right? I mean, in this case, the way we setting this context, it seems like regulation may be inhibiting growth here. You gave the example of M-Pesa, and then you gave the example of Singapore where you need a card and identification processes and so forth. I think we'd ask ourselves why we have to do that in the first place, right? I mean, there's a legacy. Obviously, we all know what happened September 11, 2001, and all the various
Patriot Act,
all the various activities,
terrorist with financing,
that. Exactly. Yeah. And so it becomes an issue. Why do we have that identity verification?
But it's not very effective, is it? I mean, we don't stop terrorists. The amount of money, terrorists deal in cash, and we spend $2 trillion on compliance for anti-money laundering these days, and we stop about 1% of money laundering. So we have to ask why we are even doing
it. Well, you could argue it the other way too, right? I mean, because of the fact that we spend that money, that's why we have 1 or 2% money laundering in the first place. It's tough to
identify. Maybe we stop 1% or 2% of it.
Fair enough, but we don't necessarily know what the level of
percentage. The only way you stop money laundering is getting rid of hard currency, physical currency, right?
Well, it's interesting. That's actually, we work with banks quite closely, and that's just one form of money laundering. You've got trade-based money laundering, and you've got, wire payments, sending it through the conventional banking system and so forth. So cash, certainly, I think in some ways it's quaint because it's almost irrelevant. The crooks have figured out more sophisticated ways of money laundering. But, if you go back to the point of what you're trying to bring along in terms of why we need regulation in the first place, right? It is precisely that. It is precisely being able to understand whether we can actually limit those types of activities. Your question is it at the expense of growth of additional banking, mobile payment systems, and so forth? It's debatable, I think, but I think it's important to balance that with why we need these identity verification in the first place.
So, Tom, have you heard the term reg tech?
I've heard the term, but I haven't.
Okay,
you're not talking. You haven't talked about while I walked in anyway. Is whether this is regulatory capture. Whether some of these regulations are like the taxi firms trying to keep Uber out.
Yeah.
And if you have a strong government and smart regulators, you can open things up safely. And to what extent are the regulations being captured by the incumbents to protect them?
Because we actually know now, for example, if you take identity verification, right, that an algorithm that captures through a phone, smartphone, a driver's license and facial recognition, that's way better than a human in a branch looking at an identity document. 5 to 10 times more accurate, right? So, anyway, Lou, did you?
Yeah, I wanted to just pick up on this point about regulatory innovation or innovative regulation, whichever way you want to call it, because it is an oxymoron. But in my part of the world,
your part of the world?
I'm based in London, and we see a whole European regulatory environment which is actively trying to encourage fintech and encourage lots of new startups to do things to get this financial.
London's been very inclusive for the whole fintech stuff, and we had Boris Johnson on the show recently. And we asked him why London's a great center for fintech, and he says, we've got the bars, we've got the vibe, but we've got the coders.
So he didn't. Oh, he said that, did he? Yeah. He didn't ask him about how to do some JSON or some RESTful stuff.
No, no.
But my point is that we in the financial services sector, certainly in Europe, are almost unique in the sense that every other sector, whether it's transportation or accommodation, regulators are struggling to catch up with the kind of the innovation that's taking place in Uber or with Airbnb. And how the hell do you tax people who are selling Airbnb? How do you regulate for taxes? In Europe and specifically in the UK, we seem to have the situation where regulators are actively opening the door for new innovation and saying, come along, do your new identity kind of based
like e-payments apps, license and all that
stuff. At least a lower level of regulation. And so I'm sort of standing up for the regulators here in Europe. They're doing a good job for us. Thanks very much.
Yeah, good. Hey, so just to welcome into the studio, Yobi, did you want to say a quick hello? Yobi Benjamin's just joined us in the studio.
Hi.
Hey, what do I call you now, Yobi? What's your job title now?
I'm the chief technology officer for a company named Token.
Yep.
And the reason why I'm here in Sibos is we won the New York part of the Inner Tribe Challenge.
Okay, so you're here part of the Inner Tribe.
Yes.
But you were previously at Citi.
I was previously the global CTO of Citibank Institutional Clients.
So now you're in a startup.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
It's three startups.
Three startups. Okay, good. So, what, did you want to have a response to that, Henry?
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, I agree, Lou, in terms of regulations. Actually, we all can agree here that regulations will always lag behind innovation. Right? I think hopefully.
Well, regulators aren't innovators.
Exactly. But there's also a purpose, certainly. I mean, I go back to my example of, you know, trying to prevent money laundering and so forth. But the reality is regulators can also help drive standards, and standards help drive innovation. I mean, it's a bit of a
well, at least they can drive interoperability. I don't know if standards drive innovation. I think they, yeah.
Well, let's look at it from a bank's perspective.
What do you think, Tom?
They may permit it.
They may permit, what's that? What meant the,
interoperability.
Permit innovation. Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Let me add to that, right? When you talk about banks driving standards, regulators driving standards. When you look at it from a bank's perspective as well, what they need is transparency. What they need is kind of a clear set of rules. Certainly, you're right. I mean, banks are not necessarily innovators, but they're certainly putting the effort in to be able to start to get some of those things going in their organizations. But the reality is, I think you look at standards in some ways, from a transactional perspective, it is really helpful. Many clients, you know, I work with clients all over the world in terms of banks and trying to get a sense of what some of their challenges are. They're saying, please help us understand what we should be doing from a risk-based perspective when they look at, you know, any potential money laundering issues that a bank may have. And the regulator is not coming up with that. And they're saying, you know, it's becoming really, really frustrating for us.
So let me ask you a question, and collectively we'll get your input into this. And Yobi, I'm sure you'll have an input into this as well. One of the most basic requirements in 3 to 5 years is going to be that most of the products or services that I offer as a bank will have to be executed in real time, right? So how does that change the way we think about identity and the way we think about KYC? You want to have a shot at that, Yobi?
I'll take a shot at that. First and foremost, our current systems today do not allow for that.
Right.
And I know this because I ran one of the largest systems in the world. Unfortunately, it requires a real overhaul. But also, unfortunately, it has to be cheap.
Right.
And you know, the challenges I had as a banker, for example, is like, I had a $16 billion budget a year. Half of the year, the job was to cut $1 billion.
Right.
And another $1 billion the next year. And another $1 billion. It's never like, here, take all the money and do whatever you want to do with it.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do, without being a little self-serving over here, is to reinvent the global rails that are used for money. And there are several. And with the use of the internet and a little crafty encryption, I think we can do it. In fact, we're going to be demonstrating that practicing there in the other room and then demonstrating it tomorrow on Wednesday.
Okay, cool. Hey, Tom, you know, what do you see coming down the pipe as a curator of what's happening in the fintech space, and what excites you about sort of the real-time application of financial services and more, you know, these experiences where financial services are embedded in them?
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I think a lot of the uses we haven't discovered yet, but I saw a video of Singapore, which has an immediate payment, and somebody drives up to a store and makes a delivery, and they settle the whole thing on a mobile phone, and the guy drives away, and the payments are right there.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to make a huge difference, especially for individuals who are spending just to their limits all the time, and then doing emergency payments so their electricity doesn't get cut off. I mean, that's sort of maybe a margin.
So sort of managing your money is sort of become an intelligent ecosystem.
Being able to do it. I did a story for The Banker and 2 years ago, and I talked to both Citi and JP Morgan on an anonymous basis.
Yeah.
And their payments guy said, it works fine. You know, they can use Western Union if they have to go in a hurry. It just... They were just blowing it off. They didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Well, you know, U.S. is like we're 10 years behind Kenya right now.
Yeah.
In terms of person-to-person payments on mobile phones.
And
right?
the Fed is really moving ahead. They're doing a session on Wednesday morning to talk about their progress, but they've really put together a list of
okay.
the criteria.
Is that here at Cybus?
Here, yeah.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Yeah. Right, we'll get some report on that.
Yeah, I sit on the Federal Reserve's Faster Payment Task Force.
Right.
And my biggest fear always when you talk about the Fed and having that experience that I was sitting on that same table yeah. is how incredibly slow this will be.
To actually do. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, and this is a thing which is occupying my mind probably more than anything else. It's kind of quite boring talking about the back-end plumbing of immediate payments, but you know, people think it's just another like option of instead of doing ACH or instead of doing RTGS, this is another. But this is really fundamentally important.
What's RTGS stand for?
Real-time gross settlement systems, yeah, high value stuff.
We've got people that don't know about these acronyms listening to the show, so.
Okay, so yeah. so the
we need like an acronym translator.
Indeed, yes.
Babelfish.
Yeah.
So
Babelfish.
So the whole point about immediate payments is it's not just about a payment rail for its own sake. It's about trying to provide something which is dead easy to implement into real time trading systems, and making it very very easy and recognizing a lot of these payments will be initiated in apps, in platform companies, in sharing economy type companies where they need to have payment and settlement now immediately. Yep. So it's really, really, it sounds quite boring, immediate payments, but it's actually really, really quite exciting.
Okay, so yeah. Let me just do a quick summary in the last, minute or two we've got before we finish off the show. What are you guys looking to accomplish this week at Cybus? So, Henry, you go first.
Yeah, sure. I think the challenges...
30 seconds.
30, okay. Sure. The challenges are various compliance regulations for banks, right? It's always a big issue. They got to look at screening the payments, screening the KYC. It's a matter of screening trade now as well. Trade-based money laundering is an interesting thing. I think it's really trying to get that message out there and helping them understand the significance of this issue.
Okay. Tom, what do you want to get out of
Cybus? I'm going to try not to scream the next time I hear customer experience. this industry thinks it's really moving fast, and you hear these things, and it just goes year after year, and you want to see, let's get this done and move on to something more exciting.
Yeah, well, Yebi?
For me, I'd like to recruit more bank partners. We have some fascinating partners that we've lined up, Amazon, Apple, Uber, Airbnb to try.
It's interesting, none of those partners you mentioned are banks.
Exactly, but they're the merchants that the banks right. like to deal with.
Sure. Okay, cool. Lou, what's in store for you this week?
Well, as I said, a lot of immediate payments and the linkage of immediate payments, all the other components of payments ecosystems, including fraud checks, reporting, and anti-money laundering checks, all in one big platform.
You had to put a downer on the end of the show, didn't you?
Sorry.
You could have said customer experience, and we would have been happy.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, guys. Well, that's another great wrap-up of Cybus. Thanks, Tom Groenefeld from Forbes, Lou from ACI Worldwide, Henry from Acuity, and Yobi Benjamin from Token. Yeah, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.